This is the current federal tax developments for the week of November the 13th, 2017. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by the Lascalzo Institute, a Kaplan company, and by your state society of CPAs. This week, we're going to revisit yet again the issues of what's going on with tax reform in Congress. We started last week with a description of the House Ways and Means Committee, what had been introduced in that committee. Since then, a couple things have happened, and we want to kind of keep track of those things that took place this past couple weeks. First, and most importantly, the hearing started, and we had two sets of amendments offered by the chairman, which have been adopted. So we're going to talk about those changes that took place. We're also going to talk this week about the Senate's release of the description of their bill at the end of the week. And we'll talk about what differences there appear to be between the House and Senate versions that we know of right now. So as I said, the process is continuing. This week is probably the key test week for all of this. Why? Because this is the week when we figure out what happens in terms of can they actually get a floor vote in the House. This week will be the test that will pass this bill. And how close will that vote be? And will they have to cut additional deals to get it to go through the House? Or will the bill that cleared the Ways and Means Committee simply pass the House as is? All of these are things we get to watch for this week. But you may be asking, since this isn't law right now, and it's changing all the time, what in the world do we do right now? And the answer is you got to remember one important thing. Nothing I'm talking about here is yet law. That is very important. And there is no guarantee it will become law. It is possible that this thing will just fail entirely. Nothing will ever be passed. Nothing will change. And, you know, you could just ignore all of this and pretend that nothing was going on because, for practical purposes, nothing is. Well, yeah, I don't know that we're going to quite get there. I suspect they're going to pass something. But I also think it's very important that if something does pass, it is highly unlikely that it will look exactly like any of the bills we have in front of us right now. I would expect additional changes. I would expect some things to happen. We may see some new things come in. I will say, though, that this is still useful because here's what we've got right now. Right now, you want to understand your client's exposures and opportunities with what we have in the bill for the moment. The reason for this is pretty simple. What we have in the bill right now, it pretty much tells us, you know, a lot of the things. If they're going to do something, it's probably something that either is in the bill right now or is very much like something in the bill right now. So you certainly can see clients who may have opportunities or exposures under the bill. So you want to keep your eyes open for what's going on there. As well, you want to be ready to, your clients are going to ask questions. So you want to be able to discuss the issues with your clients, talk about what actions might make sense if something happens, but always reemphasize to them, look, nothing has passed yet. Nothing may ever pass. So don't go do anything right now that is irreversible, right? We can talk about this. We want to be ready for it because it's conceivable if this thing hits its schedule, we may not discover what we have for sure until mid-December. We may have less than 2 weeks and potentially even 1 week to actually do something that we may want to do by the end of the year to have something happen either under the old law or the new law, whichever one's better for a client. But we won't know that until we get these things done. So we need to be very, very careful about not overreacting. Now, that said, we have a couple of things that happened, as I said this week. Hearings began in the House Ways and Means Committee. Those hearings started with the chairman issuing, at the beginning of the hearing, a set of proposed amendments. So even though the hearings had not yet started, over the last weekend, obviously the text of the bill was out. Then certain items ended up being negotiated or noticed over the weekend. So the chairman came out with some additions to start the week. He would come out with a second set later in the week, but let's talk about the first set right now. The first set of changes. There would be rules mandating that individuals claiming the earned income tax credit have to report the proper amount of net earnings from self-employment in order to be able to claim the earned income tax credit. The courts have kind of held that now. You can't leave income off or add income to, or leave deductions off, I should say, or add income to get a maximum earned income credit. This will make it very clear that, yeah, that's not allowed. The law will make it clear. You have to report the proper amount of income or you're blowing your earned income tax credit. So the theory there is, I assume, that's an anti-abuse provision. Also a provision to cut down on fraud and to, you know, allow the IRS to not pay out refunds they shouldn't, the theory would be, but you're not going to like this one necessarily, is employers will have to give the employees' names and addresses on the payroll tax returns, like the 941. Currently on the 941, all we tell the IRS is how much we withheld, how much tax we owe under Medicare and FICA, but we don't give any details about who our employees were. The IRS is now going to be getting that information because I would assume that's going to allow them to combat fraud. They're going to know at least for three quarters of the year who you work for before you file your tax return. And, you know, basically they'll also much more quickly know the whole year information on you. If you are, you know, if basically, you know, you file your return after January 31st and the 941s are in. This will probably help them control, to some extent, fraudulent returns where people invent W-2s because, basically, if you didn't actually work for the company, you're going to show up in either 941s. That strongly suggests you shouldn't have a W-2 from that company, which, you know, could help them control the fraud somewhat. But it is going to be a bit of a pain for those who have to do payroll reports. They did do something to carried interest in the chairman's amendment. They did not make carried interest go to the full reform that some people had pushed for, where all the income flowing out on a K-1 for a carried interest would be subject to ordinary income only. But they did say if it's a carried interest, you have to hold it for 3 years. Now, for those who are not aware, carried interests are very popular in hedge funds and the like. They're an interest given to somebody who's going to manage the fund. It's a profits interest only. But what flows out of that, obviously, is the type of income the hedge fund has. So the hedge fund has mainly, let's say, you know, dividends, capital gains. It'd be that lower tax income would flow out. A lot of people, and by the way, an income not subject to SE tax. So a lot of people were upset about that type of income being there. They wanted that to be treated as a traditional earned income item. You're not going to get that, but this rule does say that if you get such an interest, you have to hold it for 3 years before you can sell that interest and get long-term capital gain treatment. They clarified part of the 1.4% excise tax on endowment funds for universities. They clarified this only applied to universities that have endowments more than $250,000 per student. This Ivy League endowment tax, which was noted earlier, lots of universities are upset about it. Certainly, universities with large endowments are still going to be upset about this tax, but we'll just have to watch and see what happens. Another proposed amendment, there's a special rule going to be allowed to individuals that receive stock in closely held businesses. They'll be allowed to defer for up to 5 years income from stocks or stock options or restricted stock units in those closely held businesses if the stock is not publicly traded. That's going to make it easier, presumably, for somebody to exercise the restricted stock units or, you know, the stock options prior to the company going public. So they'll be able to defer it. You know, a non-public company, they probably can't sell the shares. You won't be able to sell them really until a market opens up. So the idea is we'll give you a 5-year deferral. Now, obviously, the company never goes public. You have to pay up anyway. But, you know, 5 years give you some time to accumulate the money to be able to pay the tax. So there would be that potential deferral. They got rid for a lot of intangibles, you know, copyrights, patents, those sorts of things, got changed in the original draft to have any sale of those be considered to be ordinary income for many people. Well, apparently the musicians got a hold of the tax writing committee, and so they're going to kick back in a provision that had been in the law in which the original bill would have removed to allow a musician to treat a self-created musical work as a capital asset. So that will not go away. That'll still be part of the bill. There are also a lot of flack they got for stopping dependent care assistance programs. The Congress has now said, or the Ways and Means has said, well, okay, we're going to let them continue for the next 5 years. Now, since that makes them simply into the same time frame as things are coming up for being re-upped, we need to have these things on the extenders. A new extender bill issue comes up. That means there's a good chance that these will never actually go away, but will simply be extended. So dependent care assistance may actually have survived, at least on this side of on this side of the Capitol. Now, that was the First Amendment, right? Later in the week, as lots of complaints came in, we got the chairman's Second Amendment, which was introduced the last day of hearings. And the Second Amendment actually mainly addresses a lot of specific complaints. For instance, the National Federation of Independent Businesses had complained loudly that special 25% rate did nothing for most small businesses. Because most small businesses, the owners do not have a tax rate above 25%. So the fact that pass-through income would get a 25% rate meant they got no break whatsoever from this. The National Federation of Independent Businesses was threatening to oppose the bill because of that being in there, and they didn't like the other changes. So in order to try to win them back and address their concerns, we now have a special rule that will eventually allow small, now you got to be under certain levels of income, but small pass-through interest holders to get a 9% instead of a 12% rate on earnings up to their 12% bracket. Now, this rule would only apply for the first $75,000 of such income, and only if the shareholder or active owner had less than $150,000 in taxable income in that pass-through, or taxable income they have with the tax-through business. So basically, they got to have taxable income below $150,000. They got $75,000 of the income. But we're going to phase it out so that by $225,000, it would be completely phased out for the individual. So it's actually going to drop on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Okay, the rate would be phased in over 5 years. So the first year, it's going to be an 11% rate, right? Then we're going to quietly start moving it in. If you're a single taxpayer, the phase out goes between $37,500 and $75,000. If you are a head of household, we phase out starting at $56,250 and go away at $120,500. So again, this is meant directly for the National Federation of Independent Businesses to get their support. Don't know that it has, but, you know, they got something to work with. Also in the Second Amendment, we removed the self-employment tax revisions we talked about last week. Remember last week I told you, S corporations would suddenly no longer be beneficial for self-employment tax because self-employment tax would be imposed on the labor portion of the return from a flow-through business. And it wouldn't matter if that labor portion was being taxed to a proprietor, a partner, or an S corporation shareholder, it'd be taxed. Now, the S corporation shareholder would get credit for the wages that have been paid, so that already had FICA on them. But any flow-through income that was considered to be from labor that he hadn't obviously paid out as wages, that would have been subject to SE tax. Obviously, it would have solved the whole S corporation reasonable compensation problem, but it would have also upset a whole lot of S corp shareholders. They pulled that out of the bill. The thing to remember about this, though, is this would have been a decrease in self-employment tax for partners in partnerships, especially if they have significant amounts of capital invested. So, you know, whether it's good or bad depends on whether your client was in a partnership or was in an S corporation, which way it is. There was a lot of complaints about getting rid of the adoption credit, so this bill restores the adoption credit. That is restored in the bill. The bill requires also a Social Security number for any child if you're going to try to claim the entire amount of the enhanced child tax credit. Right? That's been added again, obviously for fraud issues. They add a provision that if you're in a situation, which most people won't be, but if you are, it's not a bad thing to have, you could roll from a 529 plan to an ABLE account. Remember, ABLE accounts are those that are disabled early in life. They get this special account that's kind of like, you know, the poor man's special needs trust. And what they're saying is you can take the 529 monies, move them to an ABLE account. So good, bad, whatever, you may like it. Car dealers were apparently upset with one provision in the bill. Remember, the bill provides that interest for those with total revenue above $25 million becomes only deductible to the extent it exceeds 30% of taxable income as adjusted. Well, the car dealers who have large flooring accounts to finance their inventory, you know, and paying lots of interest on that, they were upset because while the real estate industry and regulated utilities were exempted from this, they weren't. Now, the real estate industry and the utilities have a problem. They're exempted, but that exemption means that they can't claim the 100% bonus depreciation. Yeah, in essence, that's the trade-off. Well, this is going to allow those with flooring floor plan financing, which is normally car dealers, they will be allowed to choose. They can get a full deduction for their floor plan financing interest, or they can make use of bonus depreciation 100%, but you can't do both. So your car dealers would be able to elect which one they want to do, which one they feel is better for them. Continuing on with the Second Amendment from the chairman, they're going to put a special 6-year rule in for S corporations for change of accounting method issues if you have an S corporation that decides to convert to a C corporation. Now, they had to be an S corporation on the day this law is, you know, the day the bill came in. And they have to decide within a certain time period afterward to convert to C, maybe to get that 20% rate. If they do so, they might be forced to make some accounting method changes. For instance, let's say this was a $40 million S corporation, did not have substantial inventories, but was not a qualified personal service corporation. So it had been reporting on the cash basis of accounting. Well, $40 million of revenue, they're going to have to report on accrual now when they become a C corp. So this says, well, we know that change from cash to accrual. There's an add back. Normally under 41A, we spread that over 4 years. They're going to be allowed to spread it over 6. Also, they're going to have this AAA account. Okay. Well, they say since obviously we sprung this on you quick, you might not be able to pay out the AAA within a year, which is the period normally you have to get rid of the AAA if you elect to become a C corp. They're now going to allow you to treat all distributions from this prior S who came in during this period as pro rata coming from earnings and profits and AAA. Obviously, since you're adding to E&P but not AAA, the quicker you can get the money out, the better. But you still will be able to get that AAA money out or get credit for it. And it'll be pro rata credit going forward. They had a provision requiring you to capitalize research and development costs over 5 years. You know, capitalize them and amortize them over 5 years. That's in lieu of the expensing that's allowed now. It'll be 15 years for a foreign entity, right? They're keeping the research credit, but they need to raise some money, so they came in here and added this provision. They will, however, allow attorneys who are getting on a contingent fee to immediately claim a deduction for any expenses they pay on those contingent fee cases. Some circuits had held no, that since they had a right to take that, you know, that was part of their agreement, they'd get that and the contingent fee if they won, that they had to wait to see how it turned out. Congress has changed that law, or I should say they're proposing to change that law, so that the deduction would be able to come up front. There was a lot of complaints about the original bill was going to essentially get rid of non-qualified deferred compensation for all practical purposes, but make it taxable at the same time it is taxable for FICA purposes. The House has now gone back and pulled every part of that. Now, you might be celebrating, but hold your celebration for just a second. The Senate bill that was introduced the same day contains that same deferred comp provision in it. So we'll have to watch to see if the Senate removes it or if the Senate leaves it in because they're tight on money. The House amendment also provides a special rule that you cannot make an A3B election on restricted stock units. Okay. It also, remember that tax for repatriation, what some were calling the Apple tax, right? It's a tax Apple Computer's been pushing for to get their offshore earnings back in the U.S. at a lower tax rate. Well, they didn't change how that worked, but what they did do was raise the rate by 2%. It'll now be 7% on earnings that are held in illiquid investments and 14% on earnings and profits that are in liquid items. Those are both 2% higher than they were in the original proposal. And the odds are it's going to cost Apple a bit more, shall we say, when this bill comes in, but they'll still get it in at a cheaper rate than they would under the old regime. Again, now remember, anybody in this position owns more than 10% of a foreign entity. They're going to be stuck with this tax. They'll be able to pay it over, you know, an 8-year period, but they're stuck with the tax. Now they're going to be stuck with a bit more. Also, to raise some money, they delayed the repeal of the estate tax by 1 year. It will now go away in 2024, not go away in 2023. So that's the House Ways and Means Committee bill. Now that bill moves on to the House floor this week. Key thing to watch for, does it pass with few changes, or are we going to have to make a whole bunch of changes? The more changes we have to make, the more problems this may be eventually. So keep your eye on that. Now, the Senate released a summary of their bill from the Joint Committee on Taxation, was issued on November 9th. Their bill is going to have 7 tax brackets, not 4. You want to see the detail of the brackets are in the Senate committee bill or in that Senate committee description. You can go look at them there. Their brackets will be a 10%, a 12%, 22.5, 25%, 32.5, 35%, and 38.5% brackets. They've added kind of intermediate brackets, and they actually reduced the top bracket, which the House did not do. There is no sign of that bubble rate in this particular bill that temporarily raised the rates for some people when their AGI got above certain levels to a marginal rate of 45.6%. That's not in this bill. Given the flack that's gotten, my guess will be if one of the rate brackets we've got in the bills going in, it's probably going to be this one, as opposed to the one in the House bill. The child tax credit will be expanded to $1,650 from the $1,600 in the House bill. Now, fair warning, Mike Lee and Marco Rubio, who have been pushing for a higher child tax credit, have said this is not, no, they don't like this one. They don't think this is good. If it's enough to stop them for the bill, it will be a whole bigger issue. But both of them have been pushing for a much higher child tax credit. And going $50 more in the House is not what they were talking about. We would double the estate tax exemption immediately, but they would not repeal the estate tax. Susan Collins had indicated that she might not vote for this bill if it repealed the estate tax. Apparently, they've decided that, and they also figured out it, the budget apparently won't take it on their side. So there would be no estate tax repeal. There'd be a simple doubling of the exemption. So we'd get the exemption up there. That would eliminate a lot of people who currently pay estate tax, but wouldn't it eliminate them all? So, again, have to watch it. If your client is in a position where, you know, they have an estate of $9 million, then doubling is probably a great thing. If they have an estate of $50 million, they probably more strongly prefer the House version of the bill. Home mortgage interest. It's going to remain at a $1 million for purchased indebtedness. Home equity still not going to be deductible. It appears the second home will also go away. But we will have the $1 million limitation will stay in place instead of the lower $500,000 that we saw in the House bill. So that's probably good news. There's a little bit slightly lower standard deduction here. We go back to the framework's proposed standard deduction. They just didn't roll it up. The House did an inflation adjustment for 2017, for 2018, from 2017 to roll it up by a couple $100. The Senate was not doing that. I've got to presume that's a budget issue to make the numbers. If they did that, they would blow the numbers, so they kept it where it was. They also, though, have no provision in here about any changes to carried interest. So the House had that new provision on carried interest. The Senate does not. Also, casualty losses will be allowed, but only for presidentially declared disaster areas. Other personal casualty losses will be disallowed. Business casualty losses will still be allowed. Now, this is interesting because the House bill got rid of personal casualty losses, but only allowed them for, you know, kind of finishing up the hurricanes, the 3 hurricanes that hit this year. This would cover any presidentially declared disaster. That includes ones going forward. So immediate issue is it would qualify for any casualty loss issues that are finally determined related to California wildfires in 2018. The House bill would not, as currently written. And it would also mean that any future hurricanes, wildfires, etc., that are serious enough to be a presidentially declared disaster area, those would also qualify for this relief. Now, continuing, more Senate bill issues. They would say no deduction for any 2% miscellaneous itemized deduction item on Schedule A. The House got rid of a bunch of detailed ones like employee business expenses, and they got rid of the deduction for tax preparation fees. But this would get rid of all the other 212 expenses down there. And that would include things like your payments to your broker for investment advice. Those investment advisory fees, IRA custodial fees, all of those things would be gone under the Senate bill. The Senate does have 179 changes, but they're much less generous than the House. They'd raise the amount only to $1 million. House raises it to $5 million. And the phase out would start at $2,500,000, which is way below where the House bill starts the phase out level. So again, not as generous for 179, but they would allow a lot of real estate related items, including roofs, to qualify for 179. So that's kind of interesting, you know, as you go with that. They also would have all of those House provisions we talked about last week, where you could use cash basis of accounting, where you could get, you wouldn't have to worry about UNICAP, you know, where all of those neat things you got, where the contractors could be small contractors still. You know, they're going to move, the House said all of that was at $25 million of gross revenue. The Senate keeps every provision, but lowers the gross revenue to $15 million. So fewer businesses would qualify for those special rules. Okay, have to worry about that. Medical expense deduction would remain in the bill. But all state and local tax deductions, including real estate taxes on your personal residence, would no longer be deductible. That special $10,000 amount in the House, not in the Senate bill. The corporate rate would still drop 20%, but it would be delayed by 1 year in the Senate bill. So it wouldn't be for 18, it'd be for 19. They also have a totally different pass-through structure. They're going to get a 17.4% deduction. Is what you'll get for such income. So if you have a pass-through of $100,000 of qualified income, you would be able to write off $17,400. You just wouldn't pay tax on that. That gets rid of that whole issue in the House about the special rate doesn't benefit smaller businesses because everybody would get this deduction, but it's also much less generous. You know, the actual reduction, if you're in that highest bracket, you're going to pay far more than 25% on this tax. However, service business can get them in its entirety, unlike the House bill. They can get it, but only if their taxable income does not exceed $150,000 married filing joint or $75,000 single. If it's above those levels, we begin losing it, and basically, eventually, service businesses get none. There's no invested capital calculation to recover at least something. Okay, so it phases out over $50,000, over $50,000 for such service businesses. Now, the other thing that is important with this 17.4, you can only get it if it's coming from a partnership or an S-Corp. You can only take it up to the extent that 17.4 does not exceed one half of your share of the W-2 wages paid by that entity. So we're borrowing this from the old 199 to get this done. Like the House bill, if you lose money in 18 in this flow-through business, in 19, you're going to reduce how much you can get the 17.4% by that loss. I don't care that loss was fully absorbed by interest income the prior year. That's fine. We're not talking about changing your taxable income. We're talking about not allowing you, or changing, I should say, you know, how much you include in income, your gross income. We're just saying this special deduction is going to be reduced. So if last year you had a $50,000 loss, this year you have $100,000 of income, you're not going to get 17.4 as your deduction. You're only going to get half of the 17.4 as your deduction. So effectively, you're going to get, you know, in that case, $8,700 as your deduction, not $17,400, because we're going to reduce your amount to compute the $17,400 by $50,000, reduce that down to $50,000, and then that's what you would get it for. Qualified business income for this case will not include reasonable compensation for an S corporation shareholder. So we're still with the same rules, we're not changing that, or guaranteed payments for services to a partner. Those would also not be there. That may get a little more interesting as how all that works out, because again, now you may see some partnership agreements being restructured to make something not technically a guaranteed payment. If you can make that happen, and actually you probably can make that happen in many cases, then you may still get the 17.4. We also have a special rule because of concerns that high income people would game the system to get a lot of those pass-through deductions. We're going to limit excess business losses. If you claim business losses in excess of $500,000, those are going to be disallowed currently. So you can't have a loss in excess of $500,000 on your individual return, or we're going to end up with a partial loss of it. One nice thing in the Senate bill, the recovery period for real property is now going to be 25 years. That's nice, right? We like that. We're also going to take all of those improvement properties, qualified leasehold improvement property, retail improvement property, restaurant property. It's going to all be qualified improvement property. And unlike having special rules that are weird for each, they'll all qualify for 10-year recovery, and they're all going to be eligible for Section 179. No special rules for each category. We would have a new preparer due diligence rule, so you get dinged for $520 if you don't do your due diligence. It turns out your client didn't qualify for head of household status, and you claimed head of household status. So that due diligence rule is being expanded. Don't be surprised if that continues to expand. And they would keep the student loan interest deduction and most other, they don't do most of the other education-related changes that were found in the House bill. The Senate Finance Committee will hold their hearings this week on this bill. Like the House, expect some amendments to be made. We'll see how they come up. We'll see what ends up coming through the system. But expect that to be done. Some of them will be to change things to, try to satisfy constituents or satisfy various senators. The Senate is somewhat hopeful. I was reading articles late in the week that because they're coming second, they may have already addressed some of those things that they would have had to change anyway. So we'll see how that goes. The bigger thing to watch this week is how easy it is for the House, or if the House does, get this bill passed. How many deals do they have to cut? Do they have to change the bill and keep cutting deals? And secondly, does it clear by where every Republican votes for it? Or is this one of those they squeak by with 218 votes? Because if they're squeaking by, that suggests we may have real trouble with a conference bill, because the conference bill that comes back through, the Senate bill is already very different, will likely be very different than what squeaked by in the House. That could make it much more interesting trying to get something through. So watch what comes up this week. If for there to be a realistic chance of this passing by the end of the year, I think things have to go relatively smoothly this week. If we start seeing major hangups this week, I'm going to start to get very concerned that this bill is going to have problems, and we may hit the end of the year having no idea what our tax law is for 2018. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of November 10th, 2017. You can catch our daily updates online at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. Now, normally we do a PDF of articles every week. We're not going to do that this week, but I will try to cross-reference you to the Senate summary report, so you can take a look at that bill. If you have any questions or comments, you can send it to me, edzollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @edzollers. And be sure to join us back here next week. We'll take a look at what's going on. I'm watching other developments. Nothing major seems to have happened recently. But we also are probably going to have something to talk about what goes on with these bills next week. We're probably going to be talking about these bills until one of two things really happens. Either we get a signed law, or it stalls out, in essence, things just stop moving. Okay, if neither of those happens, expect us to continue to talk a lot about what's in this bill and its prospects for passage. But in any event, I hope to see you next week here on Current Federal Tax Developments.